Elizabeth. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
Really good. For everybody that doesn't know, Barbara Mountain doesn't live actually too far from me. You're down in New Hampshire, right?
I am. I'm in southern New Hampshire.
Southern New Hampshire. All we need is a little snow, and life would be good for us all up here. Barb has had an extensive background and experience in dealing with Social Security disability, and it's nice to have you come out and speak to our group today. But so that everybody understands a little bit about your background, you spent 16-plus years in this business, right?
Working.
Yeah, I was reading what you've done. You've gone through everything from working with actual Social Security disability claims to customer satisfaction to service, quality control, training, and you've actually been, you worked for the Social Security Administration itself, correct?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Okay.
For 7 years.
7 years. And then came out of that and went into the private sector, let's call it, and worked on the, you know, what we call our member side or direct-to-consumer, people trying to get their disability benefits, and actually established a program that had a 90% or 99% success rate of getting people approved. That is remarkable.
Right, yep. And the company that I work for now, that's what we do. We focus on helping people get on Social Security disability. That's the only type of people we work with.
And now you work for IBI in Missouri.
That's right.
Right? Integrated Benefits Incorporated. Very nice. And so we're anxious to learn all about you folks and what you do and the great work that you've done. But, you know, not to pick apart what you've done in the past, but just out of curiosity and for the audience as well as myself, when you were working with the Social Security Administration as a social insurance specialist,
mm-hmm.
What is that?
That is the person that you talk to when you go to Social Security and you want to file for benefits, whether it be retirement benefits, widow's benefits, or disability benefits. It's the person who's going to take the application with you to make sure you meet all factors of entitlement other than the medical condition. So it's who you talk to on the phone if you file by phone. It's who you sit and talk with when you file in person in the office. And then they're the people that once the claim, the medical decision's been made, by DDS, Disability Determination Services, it goes back to the Social Security field office, and it's that Social Security employee that then will process the claim into pay or process the claim to a denial.
Okay. So you have from this and obviously all the work that you've done and having a 99% success rate in the program, you've got a pretty good idea of what is going to be a valid claim and not, right?
Yeah.
I would expect.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So for those of you in the audience, regardless if you're approved for Social Security disability or not, or somewhere in between, this really is a great opportunity with Barb's experience to learn everything you need to know about getting through the process. And I also have a big chunk of questions for Barb today about those that are already approved and what the future of the program is. So sit back, relax, and let's get into some stuff here. Let's start with the basics. What is Social Security? Let's pull it all the way back to that. And what are the advantages of receiving a check or advantages of Social Security besides a monetary check that a lot of people may not be aware of?
Well, Social Security is an insurance program. A lot of people don't think of it as insurance, but that's what it is. It's insurance for workers. So the only way you pay into Social Security is basically by working. And your premiums are your FICA taxes. So you pay FICA on your wages or your debt from self-employment, and that is how you get the coverage. You get this insurance coverage. Now, Social Security disability is an income replacement program for people who are unable to work. That's what it was designed to do. The definition of disability for Social Security is a disability that's expected to last for at least 12 months or result in death. So you're unable to work, and you have a condition that's going to last for at least 12 months is what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of the advantages, you know, obviously the monetary check is important. That's the basic foundation of the benefit you're getting. But there's a whole lot more that a lot of people don't realize why it's important to file for disability benefits with Social Security if you're out. You know, one, you're probably aware of Medicare to have that extra health insurance, even if you already have current coverage. You're entitled to Medicare 24 months after your date of entitlement to Social Security disability. The only exceptions to that are if you had end-stage renal disease or ALS. In those cases, you can get Medicare almost immediately, within 3 months. But for everybody else, you do have to wait 2 full years beyond when you're first entitled to disability to get that Medicare. Another benefit, and this is probably...
Can I pause you there, Barb? You just said something that I was not aware of, and I want to make sure I get it. What are the two conditions that would allow you to get Medicare right away?
End-stage renal disease. So if you need a kidney transplant, if you're on self-dialysis, that can get you Medicare right away.
Okay.
And ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. ALS has been added to that list. That's relatively new in the past, I'd say, 3 or 4 years.
Are both of these relatively new?
No, end-stage renal has been around a long, long time, since before I started. So I'll say over 16 years since before I came into it.
Okay. Wow, didn't know that. That's great. Okay, sorry to interrupt.
Go right ahead. The disability freeze provision. This is probably one of the most important reasons to file for disability benefits, and most people do not know what this means or are even aware of this. But when you're out on disability, typically you're not working. But every year, you've got earnings going into your earnings record with Social Security. So if you're not working, you've got zeros going into your earnings record. Well, when you file for Social Security benefits at any point, whether it be a disability benefit in the future or it's your retirement benefit, the way they calculate your benefit is they take your lifetime's worth of earnings. It's not your top three. It's not your high five. It's your lifetime. So when you file for retirement benefits, they're going to take your top 35 years. And what they do with that is they add up all your wages, they divide it by 420, which is the amount of months in 35 years, and they come up with your average monthly wage over your lifetime. It's that figure that then goes into the formula to come up with your benefit amount. So the higher that average monthly wage over your lifetime, the higher your Social Security benefit will be. But if you're
now,
not
we're talking Social Security retirement now.
We're talking retirement when we say 35 years, but it would work the same even if you're filing for disability.
Okay.
It's based on a lifetime's worth of earnings, and it's coming up with an average monthly wage. So when you're not working, you're out of disability, you've got zeros going into your earnings record. Well, down the road, that's going to affect your Social Security benefit. Your zeros for a whole year is certainly going to bring down your average monthly wage. But if you're on Social Security disability, the years that you're on Social Security disability will be frozen out of any future computation. So if you were on disability for 5 years, those 5 years you were not working will not be included when coming up with that average monthly wage. So instead of taking the top 35 years, they'll take the top 30 years you're actually working to come up with that average monthly wage. So what you're doing in essence is you're protecting any future benefit with Social Security from being eroded due to years when you were not working. But the only way you have this happen is you have to be approved for Social Security disability. And those years that you're approved will not be included in that future computation.
So this would be applicable for somebody that's got, you know, a situation condition that would be 4 or 5 years, let's say, for example. They know they're going to be optimistically be able to go back to work sometime, but they could either slug it out, drain their 401k, or go this route, which has advantages as you outlined, right?
Absolutely. Yep. If they go back to work, they're protecting it. And, of course, you know, the individual that never files Social Security disability and doesn't get approved, you know, they're going to have a dramatic effect on reducing any future benefit they'd be entitled to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's particularly important for those people that have recurrent conditions. They have a condition, they can't work, they go back to work, and it recurs. That second time they come on Social Security disability, it's going to be dramatically a higher benefit if they're able to eliminate those 0 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those excessive disabilities that can have even more profound effect in making sure that you don't have those zeros. Because the less years of work you have to work with, the more a zero is going to bring down that future benefit.
That's a great strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important. Other benefits include family benefits. The fact that if you become disabled or you file for retirement benefits, there's other family members in your household that could be eligible for a benefit. There's your children, children under the age of 18. Spouse can be eligible, depending on the situation. There's aged spouse if your spouse is 62 or older. Or there's a benefit to a spouse if you have children under 16 in the household. So it's not just yourself that could be entitled to a check. There's other people in your household that can also be eligible. And it's Social Security's job to look for those benefits for you.
Mm-hmm. Key is you got to work.
Yeah. Because also cost of living increases. I mean, I used to be able to say every single year Social Security gives a cost of living increase. Unfortunately, this year is the first year in over 30 years that you can't say that. There's not going to be a cost of living increase this year. But, you know, typically there are. And they range from, I think the lowest I saw was 1.3%. In the 80s, they were up to about 13%, 14%, 15%. On average, they're usually 3 to 4% per year that your benefit amount will be increased.
Yeah, recipients are going to have to be creative this year.
Right, yeah. And the last thing I'd mention are work incentives. I mean, for those that aren't able to work, but the goal is they hope that eventually they will be able to, Social Security has some great work incentives that people aren't aware of, that they encourage you to go back to work and you don't have to risk losing your benefits to try it out. I'm a big proponent of that. I think that, you know, a lot of people out on disability, if there's something they can do, they'd like to do it. I mean, obviously for the income alone, but Social Security really does encourage that, and they really do have a great program. So I could talk more about that later if anyone had any questions, but if you are interested in returning to work and you're on, or you're thinking, you know, down the road, maybe if things improved and you got to a point you could return to work, it's something to definitely talk to Social Security about and inquire
sure.
about.
Yeah, let's zero in on that. I have a few questions set aside that I'd like to learn more about from your perspective on that. May I ask a few questions regarding the general scheme of things for Social Security? Well, actually, more specific questions. One is, one of the common things that we see is you have a stay-at-home mom, right? Raised kids, did everything great, left the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Been out for, you know, 8, 9, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So in that instance, the work history is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a problem in the system, but do you have, I mean, is there any insight that you have for those that fall into that sector of the audience?
You know, what happens there is, for Social Security disability, different from retirement benefits. Retirement benefits, to be eligible, you have to have worked and earned 40 quarters over your lifetime. You can earn a maximum of 4 quarters in a year, so it's really just 10 years of work, and it doesn't matter when you earned it. You may work from age 20 to 30, and you never worked again, but at 62, you would be eligible for retirement benefits. Disability is a little that not only do you have to be what's called fully insured, means you've worked enough over your lifetime based on your age, you have to be what's called disability insured. And that means you have to have worked in the recent past from the point you became disabled. And what they look at is they go back 10 years, and you have to have worked at least 5 of those 10 years. And to get technical, what it means is they look back 40 quarters, and you have to have worked at least 20 quarters during the prior 10 years.
And paid your taxes.
Right, and the FICA taxes have been paid in.
Part of the deal.
Yep, exactly. If you weren't, you know, you weren't paying, you were working but not paying those taxes, you're not going to have the coverage. It's not going to show up. For those people, there is SSI, which is Supplemental Security Income, and that's a disability program that is administered by Social Security. It is not Social Security. It's super confusing for people because you go to the Social Security office and that's where you file for it, but it's not a Social Security program. It is actually funded by general tax revenues, and it's based on income. So when they start asking you, what do you have in resources, what do you have in the bank, and how much money do you make, they're asking because they're looking at the SSI program for you. Social Security, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. It doesn't matter if you've won the lottery. It's an entitlement program that you paid for. But the SSI program is based on need. So, and for that individual who has not paid into Social Security and is not eligible, they're going to want to look at that and look at your income and resources. And it's a monthly benefit that you're entitled to, but it is pretty limited. It's certainly not enough that anyone could live on, but it is a disability benefit that's out there.
And somebody could get both, correct?
Yeah, you can get both. SSI is reduced based on any other income you have. It will be reduced. So the Social Security benefit you have is going to reduce the SSI benefit. In order to get both, your Social Security benefit would actually have to be less than the SSI benefit, so you have that offset amount.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. On the other end of the work age spectrum, there's a lot of question and confusion around somebody that is approaching early retirement, age 62. And the questions are, and a lot of people, I don't think, are aware that if you're 62, 3, 4, all the way up to your 65th birthday, they can apply for Social Security disability.
Mm-hmm.
But could you outline, you know, some of the advantages of that and how it relates to the check amount? Are the check amounts the same? Are they different? What happens when you turn 65?
Okay, great. All right. Yeah, this is confusing, and it's something really important to know if you're up towards the age 62 or beyond. What a lot of people don't realize is when you file for Social Security disability, the benefit amount you get is what you get if you were at your full retirement age. So if I file for disability benefits today, my benefit amount would be what I'd get when I hit 67. That's my full retirement age. So if I file for disability today and I continue to receive it, and I continue to receive it the rest of my life, nothing's going to change for me when I hit 67 or 65, 60. It's not going to change because I'm already getting my maximum amount. Now, when a person is approaching 62 or they're already 62 or they're 63 or they're 64 and they go in to file for disability benefits, Social Security is going to advise them to do this. They're going to say, what we should do for you is we should start taking a retirement application for you today and let's file for disability. And the reason they're going to take a retirement benefit for you is they can start paying you checks right away because you're eligible based on your age. Now, when you take retirement early, it is reduced. It's reduced for every month you take it prior to your full retirement age. So it's going to be a reduced amount. The reason you're filing for disability at the same time is if you're approved for disability benefits, the benefit amount is going to be up at the full amount. You're not going to have that reduction that you've taken at retirement. And you'll get paid the difference. So if you get awarded the disability benefits and they've paid you $1,200, but you're due $1,600 as a disabled individual, once you're awarded, you're going to get that $300 difference for those months.
Okay, that's great. So from a monetary perspective, if somebody is clearly disabled, financially it's better for them to pursue disability.
Right. It is. File for retirement if you need the income right now, and then file for disability at the same time. And if you get the disability, it will wipe out any reduction that you had, as long as that date of disability is prior to when you started receiving the retirement.
Okay. Now, Barb, what happens to the individual if, you know, we'll use the their standard retirement check was $1,200, their disability check is $1,600. What happens when they turn 65? What's their check amount?
When they hit 65, it's going to, as long as they've been approved for disability, they're already at the higher amount. So they'll already be receiving a higher amount, which means nothing will change.
So they'll be already gone up.
Once they get awarded, they were getting the $1,200. As soon as they get awarded disability, they're gone up to the higher amount, the $1,600, and it's just going to stay at that rate.
Okay. So if this, see if I get this. If this, in this example, which is, I'm sure it's a little vague, if this individual had waited until they were 65 just to collect their regular disability, a regular retirement check, would that check have been the same amount as their disability check, $1,600?
Yes. In most cases, it will be the same.
Okay.
It could be slightly different. It's something called a benchmark year. That could change based on a retirement year versus a disability year. But, yeah, pretty much it will be about the same. But they'll look at how much money they'll have given up that they could have gotten earlier by getting on disability. And the Medicare.
Sure.
You can get Medicare early. So if you file at 62, you can get the Medicare potentially at 64 versus having to wait until 65.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing to think about is most people today, if their full retirement age is not 65 anymore. You know, it's moved out based on your year of birth. So most people's retirement age now is around 66,
mm-hmm.
65 in 10 months, even longer they have to wait to get that full amount. In essence, there's no disadvantage to doing it unless you really wanted that full amount and you file for retirement and disability and your disability claim was denied. Then you're stuck with that reduced retirement amount you took. Once you take it,
right. Okay.
Okay.
Boy, I tell you, you got to really think it through. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Is there any, I've heard of some people said, listen, I took an early retirement at 59 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a real deal?
They didn't take it from Social Security. They're probably talking about with their own employer.
Oh.
You cannot get retirement earlier than 62.
Okay. All right.
They might be talking about, they wouldn't even be getting widows or widowers benefits starts at the age of 60.
Mm-hmm.
But disabled widows benefits or widowers benefits, you can get as early as age 50.
Mm-hmm.
But that means you're filing for disability, but you're actually filing on your deceased spouse's record. And you still have to get a medical decision, but you can actually get that as early as age 50.
That's an interesting. How do you get, you have a deceased spouse.
You have a deceased
and you're going to get a disability payment based on their medical record.
Based on your medical record.
I was going to say. How are you going to get a decision based on some?
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. I'm with you. All right. So I'm sure the folks in the audience out there that haven't applied or going through the process are like, you know, on the edge of their seat saying, well, how long is it going to take? And, you know, what do you have to say to that? That's one of the common concerns. Oftentimes it prevents people from filing. So it's like, oh, my God, I know Johnny down the street tried to get it, and it took him 3 years.
I mean, there's no doubt it's frustrating. I mean, Social Security is not speeding. It's not timely. And they are making some changes, trying to improve some things. But right now, the outlook isn't that great. Let me give you just some Social Security statistics. Okay, this is Social Security's national statistics on award rates. At the initial level, only 36% of everyone who files is going to be awarded. And it's going to take about 108 days to get awarded. So, you know, we usually say 3 to 6 months for that initial claim decision. The reconsideration level, and that's the first level of appeal. So everyone who's denied the initial level files the appeal to the reconsideration. Only 14% of everyone who files for that reconsideration are going to be awarded. So not many are awarded at the recon level. And again, it's about 3 to 6 months to get that decision. It's pretty similar to the time frames for the initial level.
Mm-hmm.
Denied at the reconsideration level, you're going to go to a hearing in front of an adjudicative law judge. And the award rate is 63%. And that's the best chance of being awarded. So the best advice is just keep going. Get to that hearings level. Get to where you're going before the judge, because that's your best chance of being awarded. However, the rub here is by the time you get that hearings decision, a hearing is going to take probably at least a year to get the hearing date. Some cases, you're up towards of 2 years to get that hearing decision. So it is, without a doubt, a lengthy process. You know, but some people do get awarded, and there's things that you can do to improve your chances of getting awarded. I mean, it is a factual statistic that having a representative can greatly increase your chances of getting awarded at the initial level. I recently saw a statistic from the National Organization of Social Security Claims Reps that showed they can increase your award rate at the initial level from 36%, which is the national average, to 62%.
Depending if it's the right rep.
Right, it's the right rep. And, you know, I can tell you that our company, IBI, we have a 67% award rate at the initial level.
At the initial, that's fantastic.
Award,
yeah. Well, those statistics certainly are intimidating, but my sense is that is the overall percentage, right?
Mm-hmm,
And if you look at the overall, the typical American has this, you know, diner wisdom that they're going to go apply on their own. One, because that's what everybody else they know has done. Two, they don't know the other options unless they've, you know, either met you or come to the Disability Digest. So they apply on their own. They don't do it right commonly, unfortunately, and they get denied. So if you look at that, then certainly that makes, you know, I can see that. And then when you get to the hearing, likely they don't go on their own. So,
exactly.
All right.
That's exactly the situation. Matter of fact, if you go into a hearing unrepresented, Social Security will try and stop it and say, don't you want to reschedule, and here's a list of attorneys that can work with you. They don't want people to come into a hearing without representation.
Yeah, it's not fair for them, but they can do it. So, well, that's good. So you shared a little bit of, you know, the bad news, but there is some good news for folks, and for everybody listening to this, you know, that you're in the right place to get the right resources to...
Right, there is some good news. They're making some changes. I mean, they have what is now a quick disability determination process and something else called compassionate allowances, and they're really trying to beef those up. And those are the claimants, you know, severe disabilities. And the idea is let's get them awarded really quickly. You know, we shouldn't have to be spending a lot of time on these claims. Let's award them, get them done, and move on to the claims that we need to do a little more development on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're increasing those. From last year, about 2.7% of all claims went through that, and this year they expect it to be over 4%. Of claims. And that's when you're talking about 3 million people filing for disability a year,
sure.
That's a pretty good percentage. The goal there is they make those decisions within 10 days.
Certainly it's a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go on to the next question and talk about, you know, I don't want you to give away all your trade secrets, Barb, but I want to ask you a few things that your team at IBI does that allows and helps this, you know, the members or claimants get through the 62% that you're mentioning. But before I do, I just want to outline to the audience that IBI is what I view or call this, kind of coined this phrase, a full service disability representative. And what most people from the very beginning, and there's advantages to it. And our position here at the Disability Digest is we don't advocate either way. We just we advocate that you understand that that's an option, explore it, and compare that versus, you know, filing your own claim and then make up your own mind based on an educated decision. But that being said, the statistics that you're sharing are really brilliant for somebody getting through at the initial application. And so to do that, am I correct in understanding that the work that you do is, you know, somebody has to sign some initial representation papers, they agree to work with you as their representative, and you will work with them to groom and put together their initial application that if they were to do it on their own and do the paper version would be 100 plus forms, right?
Right. Basically what we do is we fill out the forms with them on the phone. So we work nationally. We work with anyone. So we're asking them all the questions and filling out those applications for them, making sure that we're answering everything completely. We're not missing out on any potential entitlements that they might be eligible for, other people in their family, for example. Getting that date of onset right, which is really important. You know, date of onset sounds easy. You know, what date were you disabled? You know, when was the last day you worked? But, you know, for a lot of people, that's not a clear-cut date. They may have had a condition that they went out of work, and then they went back to work, and then they went back out of work again. And Social Security has some regulations that allow you to move that onset date back. It's called an unsuccessful work attempt. But you need to know that. And you also need to know that there's additional forms to be filled out to do that. And so we're going to do that with them and make sure that we fill that all out correctly. And one of the things that makes us a little unique is that we hire at this, we have three teams. And the team that does this, that takes these applications, are all former Social Security employees like myself. And that's what we are trained to do. So we hire those employees. So who better to basically complete the application for you than what Social Security, using Social Security's knowledge to make sure you're filling it out correctly, in essence.
Sure.
What we also do is then once we've got the application, we're then going to gather the medical evidence. And that's the key to this. You want to make sure you have your medical evidence. You want to make sure you're flagging the important pieces and you're showing how you meet the regulations. You're showing how you meet Social Security standards based on your age and your work history that proves that you can't work and earn what's referred to as substantial gainful activity. And for Social Security in the year 2009, that means you can't work and earn more than $980 a month. Mm-hmm. And the team that we use to do this are all former DDS employees. And DDS is Disability Determination Services. These are the folks that are making the medical decision for Social Security. So we hire those employees to come work for us because they know exactly what needs to be seen. And so when we put together the claim, we're setting it up and we're positioning it exactly as they need to see it in order to get it awarded. And that's what helps us get claims awarded, and that's what helps us get claims awarded quickly, which is, you know, half the battle with Social Security is not just to get awarded, it's how long it's going to take you to get awarded. And our goal is obviously to get them awarded as soon as possible at the appropriate time.
Well, you know, I'm the guy standing here in the middle. You know, I've got a group of members and then you folks out there, but I look at it and I think the effort to get these awarded quickly without going to hearing is of everybody's best interest. I mean, first of all, you don't have to spend a day or travel or go somewhere or do all the preparation work, and so you can do it and do it right the first time and get it approved, and that means that the member or the claimant would get their money quicker, and you might not make as much if it went to hearing, but you don't have to go to the hearing.
Right, so, and that's exactly
but not many people get it. Sorry to interrupt you, but small town, you know, I had somebody the other day. I'll just share this is my vent for the day, okay, which totally drives me crazy. This poor lady, she clearly, in my opinion, should have been approved a long time ago, but she had hired a local disability attorney who had her sign the forms for representation, and he told her, he said, go file the initial claim. You're going to get denied. And then when you get denied, you come back into the office, and I'll help you fill out the next step. And that happens. And for anybody out there in the crowd, I would just call around to 10 or 12 different local folks, and you'll find that still goes on, which is a total disservice to people. But they don't get it. So that's
because one of the things that we try to do is you're actually trying to prevent a person who's filling out an application on their own from doing or saying something that they don't realize is detrimental to their claim. I mean, you might say something, you don't recognize that that's going to cause you another hurdle to overcome to get awarded. You know, for example, I used to take claims, and I can remember a person coming in, I can remember it happening several times, individuals saying, I'm filing for Social Security disability, my insurance company is making me file.
Oh,
and
yes.
That is noted on the application because it implies, oh, the claimant doesn't even think they're disabled. When maybe that's not what the claimant meant at all. They just meant, you know, yeah, they have to file an additional requirement because of their long-term disability policy, but if the idea comes across that they don't think they're disabled. And that is just another hurdle they're going to have to overcome to get awarded.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, having a person file on their own and then just say, I'll help you when it gets to the hearings level, I think that they're missing the point of how much help they can actually provide early on in the early stages.
Yeah. Well, you know, and a lot of people, there are people that certainly have others that they can that can help them, and they can file, and they can take the time and study. We've got endless people that have done it that way. But there are those that are clearly sick, and they just, you know, the value of having somebody that's there to help you is, you know, from the very beginning, is priceless. So
yeah, the idea should be that they're taking the work out of the process for you.
Yeah, right.
The other thing I'd recommend is negotiate. Social Security, one thing you need to know is that Social Security must approve any fee that a representative is going to charge. And there's a standard fee that is pretty much any time you go anywhere, they're going to tell you what the fee is. It's 25% of past due benefits up to a cap of $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're going to say they're going to charge you. But there's no reason why they can't charge you less than that. And I'll tell you, my company, we don't charge the full amount. We actually do charge, we go with less. So you don't have to have that cap of $6,000. They may choose a different cap for you. So we'll take 25% of past due benefits up to a smaller cap. So, you know, you've got some negotiating power there. Just ask the question.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah, and most people just say, well, you know, it's in writing and it's what it is. And okay, well, that's great. So I guess one of the key things that I found from the very beginning, at least to interview a representative like somebody at the IBI team, is if they can spot the onset date and move it back, you know, 5 or 6 months, then they could make a huge difference in the benefit check or that back benefit check when awarded.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Among others. So, okay. So let's talk about going into a hearing. So, you know, goes through that. What are some of the benefits of using a representative to go through at the hearing process?
Well, a representative is going to help you prepare the claim. I mean, they're going to complete the forms with you, gather the medical evidence, and prepare the case. One of the big advantages, and, you know, I hate saying this, I'm a proponent of Social Security. It's a great program. It's incredibly necessary. I think they do a lot right. Unfortunately, they also, there's a lot of areas they need to have some work. One of the problems with Social Security at the hearings level is you've got judges making decisions. And the judges are all supposed to be following the same laws. However, it's obvious based on statistics that have come out and basically what we know. My company's been around for 30 years. We're national. We've seen everybody. We know all the judges. Some judges have a tendency to deny, and other judges have a tendency more to allow. And I think that's a big problem. It should be consistent, but it's not. I just recently read an article in the, what was it? The News Journal of Delaware, I believe, where they looked at three judges, and there were three judges from three different parts of the country, and they looked at their denial rates. And one judge had a 56% denial rate, one judge had a less than 1% denial rate, and one judge had a 93% denial rate. And there's just no way their dockets could differ that greatly. So one of the things a representative is going to bring to you, one that knows the judges in your area, is what is this judge that you were assigned to, what are his tendencies? And it just better prepares you to go in and how you're going to present that case. To know that.
Wow.
That's a sad statement, and I hate to say it, but that is the reality.
It is the game. You just have to play it, right?
It is. And you know, even if you look at the initial levels, you look at your state. You can go out online, and you can see what the award denial rates are for your state. Even though they're following, every state is following the same guidelines, you know, there's differences.
If you've got a state that has a high denial rate at hearing level, you really want to work your tail off to nail it at initial or recon.
Right. Well, it's, you know, you'll look at judges. The judges will all will vary differently. That, and that's hard to get those statistics. But I'm saying even at the initial and the recon level, they have the statistics by state because those are state DDSs that are making those decisions. And, you know, some states it is easier to get awarded at than other states.
Okay.
Which, you know, isn't a great commentary.
Here's a big issue. Social Security regulations and still apply for Social Security, all right? Mm-hmm. You know that, so I don't need to tell you that. But for the audience, clarification, those are the regulations. And there's kind of mixed message out there about working and applying. There's one side that says, you know, certainly from the person, from the claimant or a member, that people got to survive, right? The other side of it is, from Social Security, when they look at that, there's an argument that says, well, you know, somebody can work 15 hours a week and earn $900. Maybe with some modifications to their job or a change in treatment, they could work more, and they're not disabled. So the big question here is, I mean, what is your take? Is it a disadvantage to work when you're applying? Can you get these claims approved?
Well, you can get them approved. And, you know, like you said, applicants should not be punished for working and earning under the limits. However, when these claims get to the hearings level, this is where judges will look at it differently. Some judges will have no problem with it. Other judges will look at it and look at it suspectly, just like you said, and say, you know what, maybe this person does have the capacity to work more than that. The suggestion that I would make is if you are working and earning under SGA, is you get a letter from your physician that's very specific in outlining why you can't work more or why you have the modifications you have to have. It's very clear. That can help. That can go a long way. Even doing that very early on at the initial level or the reconsideration level, including that as a statement of, yes, I'm working, but this is why I can't work and earn more. I think that's one of the best things you can do going forward. Also, there are times when it can actually help your case. When you try to go back to work and you haven't been successful, that can actually, some judges look upon that very favorably because it shows, you know, this person really tried to do it and they weren't able to for XYZ reasons.
Yeah, you know, for the most part, people are just good, hardworking Americans and they would rather work. There's a lot of confusion about that. So that's very encouraging news and a great tip for the letter. So really, again, to recap this, if you're at the initial phase and you're working, then the key is get a letter from your doctor stating that you can't work more, which you need your doctor's support anyway, right?
Right.
And include that in your application.
Right.
Okay. Okay. All right, on the working topic, let's bounce around a little bit here. Once somebody is approved, being the fact that you've outlined that you're a proponent of Social Security and there's some work incentives, what are some of the highlights? What are some of the key things that you think are really keen in the program that would be helpful for members to know more about?
Sure. The first one is anybody who's been approved for Social Security disability is entitled to what's called a trial work period. And what that means is that you can go back to work, and no matter how much you earn, you still get your full Social Security check. And this trial work period is 9 months. So for 9 months, you can go back to work, and, you know, you got a job earning $10,000 a month, you get your full paycheck, and you also get your full Social Security check, and you're at no risk of losing your benefits. These 9 months don't have to be consecutive. So you may work for 2 months and it doesn't work out. And a year later, you try it again, you work for 3 months. Well, now you've used up 5 of your trial work months. Social Security sees this as an opportunity for you to test it out, see if you're going to be successful without any fear of it affecting your check or affecting your benefits.
But it's 9 cumulative months.
Exactly.
At any point in time. Okay.
Yep. When that 9th month ends, so you've used up your 9 months, that next month, you enter a new period of time with Social Security that they refer to as your extended period of eligibility, your EPE. Social Security loves acronyms. So during your extended period of eligibility, which is 3 years in length, so it starts when you finish that 9th month, for the next 3 years, any month you earn more than SGA, whatever SGA is that year, and this year it's $980, they're not going to pay you your check. Any month you earn less than SGA, you are going to get your check, the full check. Social Security with disability doesn't pay partial checks. It's either all or none. So you're either going to be in pay or you're going to be in what's called work suspense. But the key here is you're not terminated. So you can come right back on at any time. So it's a three-year period of time where you may be in pay or not in pay, depending upon what's going on with your work situation. But you're not terminated. So Social Security is saying, we know how long it took you to get on. We know you probably don't want to risk losing your benefits, but we're going to give you 4 years when you look at the trial work period plus the extended period of eligibility to try it out and feel successful without risk of losing your benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people aren't aware of that.
Yeah, that's nice.
There's also Medicare continuation. A lot of people don't realize how long Medicare can continue. Medicare can continue for at least 8.5 years beyond when you return to work. So even if you come off Social Security disability, you can keep your Medicare for 8.5 years, which is a great advantage. That was lengthened, let me think how long ago that was now. I think that was the Work Opportunities Act of 1999 that extended how long you can keep your Medicare.
So is the trial work period, is that tied to the ticket to work?
No, it's just this whole separate program that's always been there. Ticket to work is a physical ticket that you're actually sent once you're awarded. And with this ticket, you can use it to take it to a whole list of companies that will provide you with free vocational rehabilitation services. These companies, if they decide to work with you, if they're successful getting you back to work, get paid by Social Security. But it doesn't cost you anything. And the whole point of the program was to give claimants choice in who they go to get voc rehab services and allow private industry to get involved versus just using state voc rehab, which is what they had always done in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The concept, well, actually, please finish, and then I'll go on because my point is a little different than the topic.
I was actually just going to mention one other benefit is if you are eventually terminated from Social Security because of work, if you become disabled again anytime within the next 5 years from termination, when you go back to file for Social Security benefits, they will start paying you immediately. They'll pay you while making the new decision. You actually can get 6 months worth of checks while waiting for that new decision to come in. And if the claim comes back and you're awarded, then the checks will just continue. And if the claims come back denied, you actually don't have to pay that money back. It's something called their expedited reinstatement of benefits.
Mm-hmm. Now for the audience, you can earn up to $980 a month, and that's below SGA, and that would not apply to these programs. It's my understanding, right?
Trial work period, if you earn over $700 a month, you've used up one of your trial work period months. So it's actually a little bit less than the SGA figure. But when you're in an extended period of eligibility, if you're earning less than SGA, you're entitled to your full check. So as long as you're earning under SGA, you're going to continue to receive checks.
Okay. In your opinion, why is it that the percentage of people that are disabled that go back to work or do any work, even below the SGA, is so low?
You know, I think for a lot of people, it's fear of becoming overpaid by Social Security, not understanding the rules and regulations. I think people aren't willing to take that risk because it took, you know, for most people, it was a struggle to get on Social Security, and without the fear of knowing if they're going to be successful coming out of it, they are not willing to take that risk.
Exactly.
I feel Social Security does, and I felt this when I was with the administration, they're not good at public relations. They are not good at communicating and letting people be aware of how things work. A lot of people that are on Social Security disability don't even know that Social Security has these work incentives or understand them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I said we were going to bounce around, so let's go back to the getting approved side. And oftentimes, as I'm sure you know, that especially for people that are Well, when they're going through the application process, a lot of people that are not employed or haven't been employed by a large company haven't had insurance. A lot of people that have been independent contractors own their own businesses. So the point is, of my question is, that they can't afford treatment as their health continues to go down and they're not able to work and their insurance lapses. How and can somebody, can they get approved without having a consistent treatment?
Yes.
Is there
you can get awarded with limited medicals. However, it's harder. I mean, no doubt about it, it's more difficult because Social Security is looking for evidence. I mean, they're looking for empirical evidence that more than just your testimony that you don't have the ability to work. A suggestion there would be try and get whatever you can. Look for free clinics. Negotiate with physicians. There's some doctors out there that will negotiate for lower rates to try and get something to back up or substantiate, your testimony and what you're saying about your condition. So you are going to have something. Social Security will send you for a consultative exam, so they will pay to have a doctor evaluate you. I will tell you, we hear a lot of claimants that aren't pleased with these consultative exams. They don't feel like the doctor fully evaluated them or really got to understand what their issues were. Honestly, sometimes we see consultative exams at the initial and the reconsideration level used more to deny a claim than to help the claim. But if that's the only option to get somebody to look at you, then at least you have that. I guess I'd say that going forward. I don't think it's the ideal case, but Social Security does need something to base their decision on besides just verbal testimony.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And for the members, there's a whole host of low-cost, no-cost treatment options that are in the members area. If you're looking at the screen now, that's the members area. You can see the address. Just go to our homepage and look in the top right-hand corner. And there's also, regarding the medical exams, as we've gotten some tips from others about if you do go for an exam, there are some strategies that you can implement when you go to the exam, like simply taking notes and not you taking notes, but bringing somebody that will take notes and ask the doctor if you can record it and usually and follow the other steps that are in our work. But what that does is it really it holds them accountable, and typically when they are held accountable, they tend to do a better job. So a few quick tips for the audience. I don't know if you have any more for anybody that's got to go for a medical exam, Barb.
I think what you've said is actually the best ideas is to have written down exactly what happened at that consultative exam so things can't be taken out of context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't record it without knowing the regulation in the doctor because there are some problems with that. Problems with the law. Yeah. Okay. So kind of wrap up this whole applying for disability. Could you kind of boil down maybe three or four tips for applicants that are, pursuing the application process now?
Sure. I think the first thing I mentioned earlier is be prudent in what you say and how you answer questions. Make sure you're very clear in what you can and what you can't do. Being vague can oftentimes work against you. And sometimes what you meant is not how it came across. And even one little statement can undo a claim. So, just be careful and make sure that you are clear. I think being clear and concise and so they understand exactly what you mean is really important. I'd say collect your own medical records. The agency is going to send away. They have you sign medical release forms, and they tell you that they're going to get your medical records from your doctors and your hospitals. However, it can make a lot more sense if you get those medical records and submit them for a couple of reasons. One is because you know that your file is complete. You know they have everything they should look at. The agency is not going to go out of their way to get information. In addition, it's going to cut down on time. There's a huge time delay when they are sending out for medical records and having to wait for those medical records to come back. So by you providing that, you might be able to shave a little bit of time off of this potentially lengthy process. In terms of gathering medical evidence, the onus is really on you, especially when you get to that hearings level. And the last thing I'd say is learn the regulations, or at least the standards that apply to your age and your work history. The information is available on the Internet for free. So, you know, do your homework. Otherwise, you're going to be at a big disadvantage.
Okay. Good tips. As far as being prudent, see if I get this, and maybe you can confirm or expand upon it. What we find when we talk to people that are applying for disabilities, we ask a question that says, you know, explain to me in two sentences or less why you can't do any job in the United States 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, including, you know, being a greeter at Walmart or a ticket taker at a movie theater. Mm-hmm. So the common response that we get is, I have XYZ condition and I hurt and I don't sleep well, I've got lupus or fibromyalgia on the mind. But when you say be prudent, are you saying express how those conditions limit your ability to work? Is that the direction that you're going?
Yes. I'd say, yeah, don't make there be a point to everything that you're saying. I'd almost say don't ramble. I'd just be clear going in at the points you need to get across. What's important. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you say a whole lot, maybe the real important piece can get lost in that. And when you're even filling out the forms, you know, focus on what are they looking at with Social Security? They're looking to see why you can't work. So focus on how your condition is preventing you from being able to work. What makes sense in that area? How can I show how, you know, my pain is affecting my ability to think clearly.
Or one is not able to stand for more than 15 minutes, and then they got to sit down, and they only can sit for 10 minutes, and then they got to reposition themselves, and they can't
exactly
lift a gallon of milk or climb 20 steps or all those things, right?
Right, exactly, because when they're looking at vocational, what you do in the vocational world, that's where that's really important. Because you're showing that, you know, you have so many modifications that would have to be made to make it a viable situation. That's what's going to help you get awarded.
Yeah, great. Regarding the medical records, another great point is when one goes to collect the medical records, are there charges associated with that in some or all cases, or what are you finding?
It depends. There can be charges in they can charge, and I think most of the time you do find doctor's offices that will charge. Some if they give you the file and they let you do it yourself, you know, they won't. So it does vary, but for the most part I'd say that you do see that you have to pay for it in a lot of situations.
Yeah. Okay. So real quickly before we take a few questions, and I'll actually peruse the questions while I'm going through this, you know, there's all this news out there, Barb, about Social Security, it's going to be bankrupt, it's not going to be around for me, et cetera, et cetera. What's your take on that? Any comforting thoughts that you can share with the audience?
Actually, I think I can. I used to do public relations work for the administration. I used to do solvency discussions. Social Security is not going anywhere, and the reason why I can say that is it's too important to this country. Last year, there were 51 million Americans receiving Social Security benefits. That included 9 million disabled individuals. It provides so much income into this country that the country could really go bankrupt without the amount of money that gets pumped in on a monthly basis based on Social Security. So I can tell you it's not going anywhere. However, with that said, it can't stay in its existing form. There are changes that need to be made. Social Security is a pay-as-you-go system, which means those that are working today are paying for those that are receiving. And what's happening is we've got more people that are receiving than are working now, and that's what's causing this problem. Currently, in the year 2016, they will no longer be taking enough in to pay out the full benefit. So they're going to have to start dipping into their surplus. And they'll start dipping into that surplus, and that will continue at right now, they're saying, until 2037. And in 2037, the surplus is gone. So at that point, they'll still be able to pay out benefits, but only 75% of the current benefit you're entitled to. That's the estimates with today's figures.
Hmm.
So that's a problem, but it's not the dire doomsday that I think that the news might want you to hear. What it does mean is that there needs to be some changes to the program. But Social Security is a constantly evolving program. It changes daily. There are daily changes to this program. A lot of people just don't, they're so small, they don't, and it doesn't impact them that they don't see them. Some changes are larger than others. Back in the 1980s, there were some rather large changes. Children used to be able to receive benefits through college. Now kids can only receive benefits until the age of 18 or 19 if they're still in high school. That was a relatively large change. I see changes like that that are going to occur. They're going to have to change, you know, maybe who's entitled to a certain type of benefit or when benefits start may change or how they calculate a certain benefit may change. Clearly something's going to have to change. But in terms of it going away, I just don't even think it's feasible. I don't think it's something that could even be considered.
Yeah, I concur. At least in this administration.
Right.
What's your opinion on the 24-month wait for Medicare? That's a big problem. I hear a lot of pain with our members. You know, this is when people really need to be treated. Do you see any movement in that?
Well, I think that there was a pretty good push going on for a while, but the problem right now is Medicare is funding is even probably in a more dire situation than the monetary benefits, and I think that's preventing there from being any real progress. Mm-hmm. I have seen more movement towards getting some other conditions included in what can get awarded with before the 24 months, like the end-stage renal and the Lou Gehrig's disease. Trying to think of what I recently heard, what condition was being thought of getting put in there. A lot of that has to do with lobby groups, though, how well you can lobby Congress.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah. You know, there's been something put forward about eliminating the Medicare over a period of time, reducing it. I just don't think they can even tackle that right now, mm-hmm. given the cost of health care.
Yeah.
I think that they
yeah.
want to go that way, but I don't think we're going to see it for a long time.
Okay. Yeah, I won't go any further into it. It's a very, you know, there's what we want to see, and then there's all the politics involved. So let's take a few questions here and you know, maybe stretch our time 5 minutes or so, if you don't mind. And for those of you that are in the audience and want to ask a question to Barb, you can type it in the question box. I'll monitor that. Or you can raise your hand and use the raised hand feature. So we'll have time to take 4 or 5 questions. Michelle, have you logged on?
Sure am.
Nice to have you.
Thanks.
Michelle, meet Barbara. Barbara Mountain.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Michelle.
Okay, I have a question here from Charlene. I've been waiting appeal for months. Was told in September that my case is waiting to get on the judge's calendar. Can I do anything to speed it up? Thanks.
Not really. Unfortunately, I mean, you can call the hearings office on a regular basis. Sometimes mm-hmm. the squeaky wheel gets the grease to see if there's anything that they can do. But if it was, I'm going to say, just this past September, you know, on average, you're probably waiting at least a year before you're going to get that hearings date.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, I don't know if you're represented, but if you are, what they should be going for is what's called an on-the-record decision. And that's where they write up a legal brief, and they submit it, and they try to get it awarded without the need for a hearing. And we do that on just about every single case we get. And we have a great success in getting claimants awarded. That's another way we don't have to go to a hearing, is we get them to look at the facts, and then they determine that it can be awarded without having everybody go before the before the judge.
What about playing the on-the-record, not on-the-record card, the dire need card? I mean, does that have any... Is that working?
It can, but you have to provide a lot of proof. You got to prove that you aren't going to have housing, or you're going to, you know, you're having trouble putting food on the table. I mean, you have to supply a lot of paperwork and proof to show that you really do meet that criteria.
Mm-hmm. What about kids? Does that play into it if there's children involved?
Yeah, it can. But again, you've got to show it. You've got to be able to show that you are going to be without a home, or that you can't put food on the table, that you're mm-hmm. basically those essential items for survival are at risk. It can, but again, a lot of it depends on where you are. Where are we talking about? Some places treat things a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you read the questions that are in the
I can't actually. I'm not sure if there's something I need to put on to get that.
I'll read them for you. I'm just going to find another one. I have one here. This might be hard for me to struggle through. I have a son that has ADHD, but after all the meds he has tried, he says pot is the only thing that gives him relief. 21, has been arrested many times. My other son is 29, refused to come out of the room. I'm trying to get to the question here. Bear with me a minute. I cannot afford to support all three on an SSI check. Any suggestions? Wonder if these children are on SSI.
Are the children on SSI?
It doesn't say.
Yeah, because it sounds like at least a 21-year-old, if he has never worked, then the only... ...security isn't really going to be able to help. One thought, I'm not sure how old you are, but when you are eligible for retirement benefits, or if you happen to be receiving Social Security disability, your children can be eligible for a benefit based on your record. What they're called are adult disabled children. And as long as they were disabled prior to the age of 21, it has to be proven that they were disabled prior to the age of 21, they can receive benefits on your record under Social Security, not SSI, which Social Security can be a little easier to deal with, and it would be 50% of whatever you're receiving. And that's called the Disabled Adult Child Benefit.
That's a good tip. So for local resources, I would go into our members area and go down to Section 8, start with the Centers for Independent Living and see what might be available for local assistance, especially if you're living here in Vermont in a cold climate. You know, there's fuel assistance and all kinds of stuff that you can find. Okay, Sammy, you raised your hand and I gave you the power to speak, so if you can hear us, try asking your question. And then we have a question here from Dolores. Why does a person receiving... Why does a person receive qualification letters from both SSDI and SSI?
Because it's actually interesting. Social Security, a lot of field offices are required to take both applications. Whether you are potential, even if you went and just filed for Social Security and no interest in SSI, they're going to take an SSI application in a lot of cases just to rule it out and show that they checked, and then you're going to get your denial letter if you're not eligible. But they should be always checking for both programs. If it's clear that your Social Security benefit would be so high that you wouldn't be eligible for anything on SSI, then they're doing it, you know, this is kind of an internal reason, because they get what's called work credit for it. The more applications they take, the more work credit that office gets, and the more credits they get, it actually is tied to whether they can get more staffing. So some offices have requirements saying, even if you know they're not eligible, just take a quick denial. So that could be a reason why you're getting it. But they do need to check. They do need to make sure that they're not missing out on any potential benefits for you.
Mm-hmm. Good. Here's a commonly asked question from Dolores. How long does it take to actually receive your benefits once you've gotten the thumbs up favorable decision from the ALJ?
It's usually 60 to 90 days. And unfortunately, it usually takes that long from the time you know the judge is going to award it. Because mm-hmm. then he has to input his decision. The decision has to be written up. Then it has to go to payment center, and they have to process it into pay, and unfortunately it can take. But I would say 60 days is probably most, on average, how long you're going to have to wait.
Okay.
They're hoping to, one of the things they're going to is electronic signatures, allowing the judges to sign off on decisions electronically, and that is hopefully going to shave off some time.
Here's a general one. Good question, but... I'll run it by you anyway. I'm 45 years old, have a chronic illness that will not allow me to work. My doctor made me quit work due to my mental condition worsening. I have a hearing date scheduled. What are my chances of being awarded? What was it statistically you said, Barb?
Statistically, Social Security statistics
63%.
Are 63%. Yeah. If you're represented, I would certainly hope that it's higher than that. We have a 98% award rate.
At hearing?
At level. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so I guess a lot of it has to do is, what I also say to members sometimes is, if you're going into a hearing, I'm going to presume that this person is represented, is do your research and find out who's representing them and what their track record is and how many cases they've had like yours and what their success rate is. And if you don't get good results, then you might want to raise a flag.
Ask, what do they know about this judge? Are they familiar with this judge? And what do you know about him, and what should I know going in? Because you should be prepared. When you go in, you want to make sure that somebody's gone over what questions you might be asked and how the best way to position the answers, things like that.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to wrap up the application process, and then we'll get on here. But first, before I do that, I want to thank you. This has been great information and going through. I've learned a ton doing this, and so I trust everybody else has as well, Barb. But for the audience, if you're applying or looking to advance your case, the strategy that we have used is consistent with what Barb has communicated and the folks at IBI do, is really just explore your options. And what we mean by that in our strategy and the whole long list of testimonials of people that have used it and gotten approved quickly is understand what it's like by using our mini course to go through the system and prepare your case and get your medical records and what you're going to need, say, and do. You need to do that anyway, because even if you use a representative, the more you know about the system, the better it's going to be to help you work with your representative to get approved. But one of the key strategies in helping you build or advance a case is to interview a representative. Get on the phone, talk to them, and you can do this for free. They'll talk to you and they'll go through your case. I'm not advocating that you need to use them. That's not my point here or what we do here at the Disability Digest. We want you to make the decision, and here's really where I'm going with this. If you interview a representative, and, you know, the few moments that we spent with Barb here, she's outlined a lot of reasons why you would want to do that. First of all, if you've got a 62% success rate at initial application, I would expect, Barb, that your team could talk to somebody and say, well, you know what, I think we've got a pretty good crack at making this work. We could accept your case, and if you do accept their case in their initial application, that tells the member right away, well, I got a 62% chance of getting this through, right? Mm-hmm. Or what was your overall rate? 90-some-odd?
Yeah, we get over, I mean, we look at everything, we get about 99% of our claimants awarded.
99%. So if you're accepted by a representative, in this instance IBI, then you've got a 99% chance of getting approved. So that's the key thing. The other thing is take a look at your onset date. If you do it yourself and you kind of think you got it right, or you're talking to somebody at Social Security, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to come out and say, well, listen, we owe you 5 months more benefits. I haven't heard that happen a whole lot, but you could get that uncovered with a representative and formulate your case right and maybe discover that there's other, you know, diagnosed conditions that would be important in your application. But there's a whole host of things. So,
another thing I'd ask is how long, what's their average time to get a claimant awarded? Because you want to know that. I mean, you want to work with somebody who, you know, they have a good success rate at getting claimants awarded quickly, because you don't want to be sitting around and waiting forever. So I guess just another important question when you're interviewing that representative.
Yeah, great point. So on this page that everybody's looking at, there is, if you scroll down, you'll see that there is a request form that you can complete and request an interview with a representative, and we'll review that information for you, and somebody will likely contact you and ask a few more questions to see if you even qualify for an interview with a representative and do that. So just scroll down, have a look at that, and you can take advantage of that, and hopefully we can help you get through this process in a quick fashion. And like we tell everybody, once you get awarded and you've gone through and do that, make sure you let us know so we can... Thanks again for taking the time. And we hope that you hang out for the next few minutes of our program here, give you a better understanding of what we do and some of the stuff that we do for our members here. So Michelle, welcome.
Thank you.
Great. Let's start with this. We are going to go forward and announce the winners of the website startup kit contest that we ran. And for the audience that's out there, maybe you were aware of this and didn't participate, or maybe you were not. I'll just give you some background on how this all came about. We have started a course for our members. That's a free course that you can take that will help you understand if building a website is a vehicle for you to help you supplement your income. And the course is available in the members area. You can go into the members area and sign up for it, and you go through. And Michelle Toole, who's with us here today, has put an immense amount of effort into building this. And Michelle has been successful at supplementing her income through her disability and has done a great job at this, as well as lending time back. So what we did is we took and developed a contest around the whole course that we launched. And one of the reasons is that we understand that even with the free course, if you're going to start a business online, that there are some startup costs, and you do need the right tools to make it work and to shortcut it and streamline the process. And living on a disability check oftentimes has limitations. So we wanted to give a little bit back, run a contest, and award some folks the ability to get started and pay for the whole shebang right up front. So that's what we did. Did I miss anything, Michelle?
Oh, the only thing you forgot to add is the 45 minutes coaching time they get with me with the package.
Perfect. That is priceless. Okay, so the contest was run, and why don't you give some background on the contest and what we did and how we, came about choosing the winners, as it's up on the screen here, Michelle.
Well, first of all, it was a lot of fun. I was glad to see people jump in and get involved and take the bull by the horn and start to formulate their ideas and to learn a little bit about e-commerce, which was a big part of the goal, is to get a better understanding, like you said, if the Internet is actually a vehicle for an individual to use, if they're made for earning money on the Internet, or if they need to find another viable resource for themselves. And so it was a lot of fun to see what effort people put into it, read a little bit about their stories, and some of their needs and some of their goals. What we did was we kind of formulated a idea of how we would go about choosing the winners. And there were a couple sets of criteria that we used. The first one is that someone would follow through and see the project to fruition, even with challenges. Somebody that had that initiative, somebody that was tenacious enough to go ahead and battle through some of the challenges it takes to learn a new language and a new way of doing business, which varies from the offline world. Also, someone who is willing to share their experience with others. That's something that's really important to all of us in this community, is that we give and take and be able to build off of each other's successes and help each other out. It's sometimes only a matter of 5 minutes sharing our ideas or some of the knowledge that we've gained, where it could be an immense help to others and life-saving to some. So that was a criteria. Another one was that someone had showed us in their entry that they had the basic set of skills necessary to create an online business, some basic writing skills, nothing advanced, just your basic, can follow instructions. That was a real important one. Basic understanding of computers, basically enough just to get on the forum, get signed on, and post a blog. And had a good grasp of either already had a good understanding of e-commerce through some of the materials we suggested that you read, or showed a real eagerness or willingness to learn, and that you were resourceful, that if you needed more information, you went ahead and sought it out or sought Brian or myself to be able to find that information. And the last set of criteria, which was a real important part of the decision-making, which is someone that really fully read the instructions, took the time to listen to the contest question and answer interviews and the SBI tour that Brian and I put together, as well as took the time to read over some of the materials that we suggested you read with SBI to get a better understanding of what you can anticipate if you were to build a business. So that's kind of the outline we used to make a decision in reading through all of the entries. And it took a little bit of time, but Brian came up with a great kind of tool to help us decide, and like I said, it was a lot of fun. I don't know I would be willing to do it again and again if we can get as many people that are interested on board to have this experience. I think that outlines everything, Brian.
That's exactly it. So, that being said, shall we proceed?
I think so. I'm excited.
Okay. So we went through and chose the winners, and we've got them outlined here on the screen. And so before we start, I got some assistance from my kids today to announce the winners. I have a 5-year-old son who likes drums, so he let me borrow his drum so I could do the drum roll before we announce the first place winner. So are we ready?
Ready. Let's go.
First place winner is...
Gracie G.
All right. And I'm going to show the profile on the... And that is the...
Not everybody gave me their names, so
okay.
I decided to just go by community names, and they should know who they are.
Yeah. So if you're in attendance or listening to the replay, you have come in first place. So that includes one full year of SBI and a coaching session with Michelle. Congratulations.
Yay.
All right.
This was really well done. And anybody that wants to kind of get help themselves get motivated with the process, take some time to read over Gracie's entry, I think it was great.
Yeah, it was. It was. And so second, third, and fourth place also receive the like prize. So the second place winner.
Faith Works.
Faith Works. And Faith was under the gun actually finishing this from, if I remember correctly, Lorna was finishing this from her hospital bed.
That's right. She said... She was doing everything she could to get this entry in with tech problems and all and having a hard time connecting to the Internet from the hospital.
Yeah. Well, one of the neat things is to, with these entries is really understanding the people and a little bit about their background and what they've went through. And, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people have tried for years to find a reliable way to supplement their income and unfortunately haven't been able to. So hopefully this will be the answer. So... For third place,
Venom King 420.
Venom King 420 had actually an entry. I think we've got an awful slow internet service here. So, 41 year children. This was a great entry. Very entertaining. A job well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, he was actually the first entry in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, and we're on to fourth place.
Fourth place, Crowita.
Crowita, congratulations. So we had a lot of entries to go through. This is actually Kurt Rowita, did I pronounce that correctly? 51 years old in Marion, Ohio. Congratulations. So, those are your four winners. Now... We have an honorable mention, and for the honorable mention that we're going to load up on the screen here, that is, how would you pronounce that, Michelle?
Reno FXRS.
Reno. Here's what I would say. It was a tough one, as it always is, but if you choose to go forward and use SBI, email your purchase receipt to me, Brian at the Disability Digest, and I will pay for the first 2 months. So usually if you use SBI and follow it correctly, you can be profitable in, what, 4 or 5 months?
Yeah. And SBI just started a new monthly payment system that they're testing out.
Yeah.
So you can purchase the whole thing or try it out for a couple of months.
Yeah. So for the honorable mention, job well done, send me your receipt. I'd be glad to do that for you. So at any rate, that was fun. That was exciting. Again, for those of you in the audience that are listening that didn't partake, would like to partake, or learn if building a business online is for you, just go into our members area, and you can scroll down into the jobs and income section, and you'll see that you can register for the course and get started. And there's tons of free information and audios and videos, and I don't know how many hours we have in there, Michelle, but a lot. So that's great. Michelle, thanks for all that you do in putting this together. That was great.
Well, it was a pleasure. Just make sure I'm going to be sending a note to the winner.
Yep. And for the winners, this is a 12-month membership, and it was purchased for you on Monday. So timing is of the essence. So when Michelle contacts you, you know, get the information back so you can take full advantage of this. So great. Let's just do a quick recap. Barb, thanks once again for coming out, spending your time, and sharing all this valuable information with us today. Certainly appreciate that. And for those of you that are in the application process or looking to advance your case, just you can look at the page on your screen and the address, or scroll down if you're listening to the replay, and you can request an interview with a representative, and we'll certainly review that and help you do the very best that we can from our position to help you move your case forward. So, and Michelle, again, thank you. We'll have to do this again. That was fun.
That was fun. Thanks to everybody.
Yep, thanks. So if you're listening, there will be a replay of this circulated in about a week. So if you missed something, you can listen to the replay. And if you're listening to the replay, thanks for listening to the replay. We'll be back. We do these webinars usually the first Wednesday of every month. So we look forward to having you back next month. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.